Dante turned 17. He sat through meetings of policy and doctrine, met with Knack to resume his language lessons, attended the fortnightly sermons Khalid made himself responsible for giving at the cathedral across the street from their closed gates. Winter carried on. Dante hadn't realized how much administration went into running the place, and had to fight to keep up with all the communiques with distant monks and their tangled questions of scripture, the delicate politics of the courtiers from the capital, the ambassadors from small fish baronies and earldoms, looking for support from the ancient authority of the dead city. Days spun by. Sometimes Dante went sun up to sun down without seeing Blaze, who spent equal time investigating Narashtivik's pubs as he did drilling with the soldiers. After 6 weeks, the first of the rebels and refugees began to trickle in from the lands they'd left in Malan. Dante, as a Southlander, was assigned to clear their passage with the guards of the Pride Gate and establish their housing in the more recently abandoned quarters therein. They arrived with dirt-streaked faces and travel-torn clothes, some with the stumps of their limbs hanging in slings, others bearing illness and disease their war-weakened bodies had been unable to resist, or blue-black toes suffered in the frosts of the mountains. He asked Knack's aid, and requisitioned some of the younger initiates to help him, overseeing their treatment of the wounded and the infirm. 2 dozen or more arrived each day, and he called out to the Nether to heal what he could. Those he and his aides couldn't make whole were deposited in a new cemetery cleared at the edge of the woods on the southern border of the city. They weren't happy times, but for once they weren't bitter times either. In some small way, Dante thought, he was making up for all the things he'd done between Bressel and Baden. Blaze started to go along with him, speaking to those refugees strong and willing enough to swap stories and news of their homeland. Wetton had been retaken by King Charles, they told him. The renegades had deserted the forest outside Bressel. A lasting treaty had been established in the Colin Basin between the Aronites and the clergy of the other sects. The dead had been buried, and a few new temples bearing the symbol of Baden had been burnt to cinders. Those who arrived a month after the first refugees spoke of a lasting peace, a return to the relative order of the political jockeying between the aging nobles and the growing guilds of Bressel, to the same minor sparks and threats that had always existed between the wide kingdom of Malan and the lesser settled territories in its west and south. Blaze began to wander off when Dante attended to the ceaseless treatment of the ill, staying gone until the evening, sometimes not returning till the next day's noon. As time softened Dante's mood, it seemed to stir up Blaze in a way that was too active for melancholy and too pensive for wanderlust. He talked little, even when they found the time to drink together. Dante didn't know what to do. If it were him, he'd want the space to work it out for himself. He let Blaze be. The sick kept coming, scores per day, and he lost himself restoring them to health, countering the name of the dead city, one man at a time. "Let's go up top," Blaze said to Dante at the conclusion of a council session concerning the feelers toward independence that kept arriving from the Norrin territories around the foothills of the Dundons. Being recognized by Narashtivik would all but guarantee their freedom in the capital. "There were more refugees this morning," Dante said, tugging the collar of his cloak straight. "They need me."
"Just for a moment.
The city doesn't look so nasty from up there."
"Fine. Just for a moment."
Dante left the council chambers and walked with Blaze down the hall to the cramped stairway that led to the peak of the keep. The stairs spiraled so tightly, he always feared he'd get halfway up and meet someone on their way down, then have to find a way to turn himself around, climb back down to the landing, and start all over again. They met no one else, though, and emerged into the wood-roofed battlement alone. Blaze walked past where the roof stopped, out into the open wind, and leaned himself against a crenel. The city spread out beneath them. Snow starting to melt, Blay said. I think we're going to send a force to guard the passes soon, Dante said. King Charles must know this city played some part in everything that's happened. Blaze nodded absently. I've been thinking, he said. I want to go back to Bressel. That's not a bad idea, either. We should probably try to re-establish diplomatic channels before anything else can start up.
Not like that.
What?
Suddenly you can read the king's mind?
That's not what I meant. Blaze stared down hard on the rooftops, black on the south faces, where the sun hit all day, and white on the north faces, where the snow lay in shadow.
I mean, I want to live there again.
What?
It's something about this place, Blaze said, gesturing at the walled yard of the citadel, then the disrepair of the buildings in the outer half of the city. I just want to leave it for a while.
Okay, Dante said. His brain felt numb. He rested his elbows in the gap between two merlins and blinked down at Narashtovic.
When?
Soon. 2 weeks at most. I thought you meant months from now at least. Dante stared at his own hands. He'd only known Blaze a few months, but he couldn't imagine one of them traveling somewhere without the other.
Blaze wanted to leave.
We've got wealth here, he said. Respect. We're doing good things. Saving the casualties of Samaran's war. The city's starting to come back to life.
They don't need us for that.
People would die without us.
No, they wouldn't, Blaze said. You and Knack have trained enough acolytes to do the job. They wouldn't miss you if you left for Bressel for a while.
They certainly don't need me.
Do you even remember what Bressel was like?
I lived there all my life.
Well, did I ever tell you about the time I tried to talk myself into eating rats? Dante said in a tone that reminded himself of Larimore's.
The only thing that stopped me was the shame of being seen roasting them in the common room.
Blaze snorted.
It was never like that for me.
And what will it be like now?
What's so great about Bressel?
I don't know.
Blaze shook his head. He dislodged himself from the wall and glared past Dante's shoulder.
I just want to live for a while in a place where people aren't always looking at me like I might kill them for jostling me. I want to go to a public house where I still have to buy my own drinks. Meet a few women who won't make puns about unbuckling me. The people here don't treat us like men. They treat us like caged tigers. They all want to get close to us, to touch us, to prove to their friends that they're not afraid. Maybe that's all right with you, but I'm sick of it.
They're just grateful. Dante said. When they hear Blaze Butler and Dante Galland, they're not expecting we're a couple of kids.
I don't care what they're expecting. Whatever they think I am, I'm not.
Blaze turned back to the crenels and gazed down into the narrow streets.
I'm leaving, Dante. I've meant to for a long time. I just hadn't figured it out yet.
Fine. Leave then.
Dante shoved Blaze in the shoulder. Did you hear me?
Yeah.
Blaze met his eyes, and for the first time in weeks Dante saw nothing of the malaise that had dwelled in them for so long.
He meant it. He didn't want to leave Dante behind, but he would if he had to.
What was making Dante so adamant to stay then? Being recognized for once? Feared even?
In part, maybe.
But while he hadn't yet mastered Larimore's total disdain for the opinions of his peers, nor was Dante ruled by them.
Blaze was right about the refugees, too. The monks and acolytes were enough to save those able to be saved.
But it wasn't just that Dante wanted to make some kind of repentance, either.
At heart, knowing only what he had at the time, he wouldn't have undone any of the choices he'd made along the way.
It was much deeper than that.
Narashtovic remained the one place in the world that could teach him all the things he still didn't know. In a flash of instinct he would have overruled with logic a few months earlier, he realized if he let that need keep him here, while he let Blaze wander his own path, he'd be no different than Callie, no better than the motives that had led Samaran to cause so much confusion in the South. If he spent a year or three off in the world, he'd still have decades in which to hone his power.
"You really want to go?" Dante said.
"I have to."
"All right," Dante said. "Maybe it's time for me to follow you for a while."
Blaze's eyebrows flickered.
"You mean that?"
"I'll ask Callie to sanction the trip. Send us as delegates to the halls of Bressel. I don't want to just say some pretty words to princes and then come right back."
"We've done enough for now, haven't we?"
Dante shrugged.
"Isn't it time we dissipated for a while?"
"Long past, I think," Blaze said. He grinned slowly, as if he didn't trust himself to rediscover the expression. Dante laughed through his nose.
"No changing your mind. Once I ask Callie, there's no turning back.
You just worry about what you'll tell him."
"I'll tell him whatever I please," Dante said. "He knows I'll kill him if he ever tries to control me again."
"Yeah, right," Blaze said. "He probably makes you change his diapers. That's how you got on the council, isn't it?"
"You're the one who needs them," Dante said.
He lunged at Blaze, faking like he were going to knock him off the roof. Blaze gasped, then tackled him to the stones.
Below them, the city continued to thaw. Callie nodded when Dante made his case for the trip to Bressel. He leaned back in his chair and considered the boy.
"I've been meaning to send someone official. I suppose you'd do better at it than someone who can't speak the language without sounding like they're coughing up a cat. Let me scare up an escort."
"No," Dante said. "Just me and Blaze."
Callie closed one eye.
"Without a lot of retainers around to make you look important, they might not take you as seriously as you deserve."
"Going without guards and circumstance will just be the better to convince them we mean what we say."
Callie started to say something else, then sighed instead.
"How long do you plan to be gone?"
"I don't know.
A while."
"Even a leisurely pace and a few weeks indulging in the largesse of the courts should have you back here by summer's end.
We'll be there longer than that. Maybe we'll head back before the passes grow treacherous. I can't say right now."
"Why don't we drop the pretense this is a negotiation?" Callie said, rolling his eyes. "Yes, fine. Do as you please. Maybe you'll take all the pandemonium with you. If you do down there what you did up here, a year from now we could all be feasting in the Palace of Bressel."
"Yeah."
Dante gazed on the old man and found he didn't fear him. His anger and hatred had burned down, too, become cold things, some of which looked solid but would fall apart at a touch, like charred-out logs the morning after a bonfire.
"I know why you lied to me. You wanted to be important again. You wanted to have men have to listen to you again."
"I had some notion about stopping a war as well. Try to remember to include that part when you write the history."
"Why did Gabe repeat your little story, though?"
Dante said, ignoring the rest.
"Did you trick him, too?"
"Gabe wouldn't care who was leading the council. He was above that."
Callie snorted, his brows lifted and pinched together, as if Dante were making a joke. Then he leaned back in his chair and stared at the boy for a long time.
"We're going to win Norrin independence," Callie said. When I plotted out that angle for Gabe's eyes, he snapped from his brooding with a speed that approached the alarming.
Dante blinked.
"The capital isn't going to like that."
"Yes, but if you take a moment to consider the matter closely, you might see the capital's divine wisdom is a bit clouded by the belief the Norrin should do what they say because they can kill them if they don't."
Callie waved a hand at him.
"Head back to Bressel, then. Stay a while. but try to spare a moment between now and your return to think about how on earth we're going to fulfill our promise to our good friend Gabe."
Dante and Blaze left alone on horseback 2 weeks later, to the day. Packs full, affairs ordered, details of the diplomatic end resolved. Dante had been burdened down with letters of introduction and various hints toward treaties written in Callie's hand. He'd left the rib of Baden with Callie for study. He hadn't thought of it in weeks, busy as he was, with orders to forge it into a sword, if at all possible, which Callie denounced as perverse and ostentatious, but said he'd see to it all the same. Callie made no mention of the book Dante never let from his sight, and so he'd decided to take it with him once more. Other than essentials, Blaze carried little more than his sword, his single sapphire badge that marked him as Dante's second, and an empty flask which he claimed would never pass in sight of a settlement without being filled. Larimore's old badge winked at the throat of Dante's cloak as they emerged from the shadow of the keep. The streets were slushy, muddy at the edges. Water trickled between the cobbles. The guard at the pride gate waved to them as they walked through. Dante waved back, then turned his face to the tumbled blocks of the city fringes. It would take the arrival of 10 times as many refugees as had arrived so far to run out of space in the vacant houses between Ingate and Pride Gate. Tens of thousands could come before the slums beyond the Pride Gate got filled. The scent of pines began to overwhelm those of human waste. It was early spring. Cool breezes had started to thaw the lowlands, but fresh snow appeared once or twice a week before shrinking back each afternoon. They took an unhurried route along the main roads to the Riverway, the lowest pass through the Dundons. It would add 100 miles to their journey, but for once, neither of them cared about their speed. Blaze grinned as the city disappeared behind them, and the dark woods rose up around them. "Careful," he warned. "There may be bad men about."
"Whatever will we do?" Dante said.
He drew his sword and pointed it down the road. "Perhaps Blaze Chopper will defend us from those miserable souls. And Robert Slayer beside it." They laughed, slashing the air a few times, then put the weapons away, embarrassed somehow, almost guilty, as if the blades had seen too many dead men to be waved as a joke. The road rolled before them. They began to remember the prevalence of birdsong, the rhythm of clumping hooves, the rush of wind in waist-high grasses and pines unbent by snow. They joked a little, talked of what they'd do in Bressel once they'd had their talks with the local officials, but mostly they rode in silence, drifting in their own thoughts. They had stopped a war, delayed it more likely to another age, and that had cost lives of its own, a few of whom Dante'd even liked. To his eyes, the Auronites were no different or more dangerous than any other sect. Back in Malin, they would worship in secret again, or be maimed and killed for their heresy. At the foot of the White Tree, he'd been convinced they'd been one right sword away from looking on the god's face, but his certainty had dimmed in the passing of days, a feeling as lost as a spent breath. Baden itself was no proof. Sown from a god's knuckle, the creation of a human power Dante someday hoped to match, a mystery from before the memory of man. Each seemed equally likely and equally impossible. The woods gave way to plains, and they stopped in a town for a day of fresh food and a soft bed and rum for Blaze's flask. The plains gave way to hills, and for 2 days they rode in a sun so warm they were able to shed their cloaks. The following afternoon, a bitter wind blew in a storm of hail, and Dante raised his hood and heard it pocking from his cowl. Icy white pebbles bounced on the trail, dashing into quickly melted splinters. Blaze laughed, turned up his face to the light stings of the changed weather. Dante followed suit and took a hailstone to the eye. he could build a Bardon some day. He knew it in his bones. He knew it the way he knew water would feel wet, or that he could pick up a stone and throw it. At times he felt he could plunge both hands into the pale shell of reality and strip it away like sand. It wasn't arrogance, it wasn't destiny. It simply was. If he could stay alive...
He tried to tally, briefly, how many had died in the last few months, most of them faceless. A few, like Larimore, never to be equaled again. But at last it would be a guess, and he wouldn't do the dead the final dishonor of lumping them into a single number, as if, in the end, all that mattered were a quantity.
If he could stay alive, where so many others hadn't, he knew he would one day peer into those powers behind the hills and streams, and where he looked, the shadows would move.
Snow infiltrated the high hills surrounding the Dundons. The horses plodded on. They lit fires by night, cooked the rabbits Dante killed with a simple flash of nether each dusk. He prodded up the meat-flecked skeletons and set them out on watch while they slept under the burning eyes of the stars and whatever gods might call them home. He passed refugees and tradesmen and vagabonds on the roads, but by night his rabbit guard stood sentry and was not disturbed. The hills banked down to the roaring mountain-fed river, and they followed its narrow gorge through the mountains. The snow was wet and heavy, but no more than a couple inches deep. The river flowed down to meet the wide, calm waters of the Chansett, and they descended into the bony trees, studded with the green buds of fresh growth. The horses churned the mud of the thaw, and the wind tossed rain showers. Perhaps Blaze had it right. Let the world turn on its own for a while. It had done so before they were born, and it would do so after they were gone. For whatever ills it caused, the ambition of the men within it was no less natural than the nether itself. Whatever it was that drove them to do harm was the same need that compelled them to build sky-scratching cathedrals and castle walls twice as thick as a man was tall, to tramp down the roads that spoked through 1,000 miles of farmland and wilderness, to gather in villages and towns and cities in the planet-hugging reach of conquest and commerce. The same need that made them grow mile on mile of wind-ruffled wheat, that made men fill libraries with books and books with words, that made them fill their lungs with air and their stomachs with beer, that peopled a poor woman's home with bright-eyed, soot-streaked children who would one day travel from one coast to another or launch across the shuddering waves far from sight of land, or die before they knew what surrounded them, or rob an ancient temple in the dead of night, and pry its secrets from the rubbly stone. Trees thrust up around Dante, blotting out the sun. Grass sighed at his ankles and thighs whenever he stepped off the road. Hundreds of pounds of horse rose and fell beneath him. Crows spat at each other in the boughs and were chased away by nattering squirrels. In the undergrowth, mice and rabbits and wolves stirred ankle-deep leaves. Spooked deer caught the boy's scent and crashed away through the brambles, and above them, by day or by night, the wind breathed in the trees. If there had ever been gods in this place, they'd been driven out by the crush of their own creations a long time ago. Aron, he knew, had not been at the tree. The cycle of Aron had led him through unknown years of man's knowledge. He had thought it would show him its very roots. Instead, in following it to its end, to the endless snowfield beneath the white tree where he believed he would find a god, an order and a meaning and a hold on this world, he had found himself simply trapped among mad people, doing mad things, had killed one friend and been betrayed by another, one more mote in a blind storm of ash. Alone, except for Blaze. Vulnerable, except for the wrath he found in the nether. His silence deepened.
Possibly that was enough. After weeks of travel, the smoke of Wetton mingled with the dusty sky. Red clouds piled up to the west. The road forked, one branch east toward town, another to the south and Bressel. Dante led his horse east.
"Where are you going?" Blaise said, jerking his head at the other path.
"Wetton."
"We're only a couple of days out from Bressel."
"There's no hurry," Dante said.
"I want to see what's become of the city."
Blaise bit the skin around his thumbnail.
"What if they recognize what's become of us? You do remember our last visit, the local hospitality of rope and high branches?"
"Last time we were here, you looked like a rag wrapped around a stick," Dante said. "Look at you now in your fancy clothes, your hair cut straight."
Blaise eyed him.
"There were an awful lot of people in that field. Thousands, if I recall."
"If anyone gives us any trouble," Dante said, nudging his horse forward, "we'll just point them at our badges. They'll be in no rush to invite more trouble from the north.
If that doesn't do it, we'll tell them about how, at great personal risk, we saved their stupid town from war."
"This will end badly," Blaise declared, then rallied to catch up.
They headed down the road where months ago thousands of citizens had fled fire and battle. Today, a shepherd was driving his flock to market, and the pair skirted around the grungy blobs of walking wool. The outskirts of the city were hewn in fresh, blonde wood, offset here and there by the charred-out husks of what remained. The streets were thick with sodden ash and charcoal. The rap of hammers smacked on all sides. Masons and carpenters shouted from scaffolds wrapped around the sharp corners of damaged temples and half-constructed manors, squeezing out a few last minutes of work in the waning daylight. Men and women hurried home from markets or the docks, or left the quiet warmth of their hearths for the clamor and company of a public house. Blaise's mouth twitched at the signs above the pubs, the painted heads of stags or owls, or an anchor tilted on its side.
"Pint," Dante said, gazing down the street.
"As long as we're here," Blaise grinned.
They found a public stable, and parted with some silver as the horses were led away to be groomed and fed. Blaise elbowed Dante in the ribs and raced ahead through the damp chill of the early night. A fat turtle was printed above the doors of the first place he chose. Blaise flagged down a servant, and they were brought mugs and ale. Dante drank slowly, pleasantly surprised to find he liked the taste. Perhaps he was getting older. When Blaise wandered off to the latrine, Dante made a round of the room, holding a few brief conversations with any man or woman who looked at home.
"Drink up," he said when Blaise got back.
"Suddenly there's a hurry again. I have a terrible urge to go see if the inn where they arrested you was burnt down."
"If it hasn't, mind if we finish the job?"
"Let's see where the night takes us," Dante said.
Blaise drained his ale, and they hit the street again. The laughter of men echoed through the alleys. They wandered the city, half remembering streets they'd last seen half a year ago, their direction sense aided by a couple pints apiece. Dante kept an eye out for the boys who'd helped them then.
He couldn't remember their names,
but didn't see either. Probably they hadn't made it through the upheaval. They'd had nothing to protect them, even in times of peace. But they had had their wits. Maybe they lived yet, hiding under the docks, peering down from the roofs on the men who owned the streets, waiting to descend till they could take a piece for themselves. Finally, Dante and Blaise came to the corner near the north end of town, where they'd slept a single night. The building was gone, torn down, replaced by a few tents and a small shack. Blaise spat on the dirt.
"Too bad buildings don't have tombstones," he said, giving the grounds the finger. "I've a sudden urge to urinate."
Dante peered down the street, knowing the pub the man in the fat turtle had directed him to had to be near. Blaze finished his business, and Dante headed down a cross street. Just when he thought he'd gone too far, his eyes seized on the image of a four-fingered hand painted above a pub door. "This looks as good as any," Dante said, swinging through the door. He glanced through the room, then sighed and took a seat. After an hour and 2 pints for him and 4 for Blaze, he was ready to try their luck somewhere else. Blaze was rambling on about how they should try to get arrested again just to see if the watch had the guts when the door banged open. "Be right back," Dante said, threading past tables and outstretched legs to intercept the man who'd just entered. He stood behind the brown-bearded figure and tapped him on the shoulder. "Time to meet your maker, you villain!" Robert Hobble turned and punched blindly for Dante's head. Dante sidestepped the blow, then jumped forward and grabbed the man's collar. Robert screwed up his face, eyes leaping between Dante's.
"Lyle's soiled drawers," he said with beer-thick breath. "You made it. Did you really do it?"
"It's done." Dante heard bootsteps behind him. He stepped aside. "No thanks to you, you cowardly son of a bitch," Blaze said. He brushed past Dante to face the old friend Dante'd been hunting since they stepped foot in Wetton.
"You'll understand someday, you filth-mouthed pup," Robert said, lips and eyes creased with a smile.
He staggered forward and crushed Blaze up in a hug. Blaze's chin rested on the man's shoulder, and he gave Dante a strange, knowing look he'd remember years after Blaze had gone, but would never be able to understand. At times he thought he saw gratitude in that look, but at others it could have been betrayal. Sometimes he saw nothing in it but confusion, so faint it was barely there at all, like the face of a man who's forgotten how it had ever felt to be young. Robert unclinched, laughing and clapping his hands.
"This calls for a round. Many rounds. Rounds until they get the picture and roll the keg right up to our table."
Dante hunted down a servant and let her know she had some lively stepping in her future. When he returned to the table, Robert was already yammering on at Blaze.
"So much has happened, boys," he said, draping one hand over the back of a chair and pointing at them with the other. "Came back and the place was a battlefield. I rallied a few of the fellows I knew to help retake the town, and what do you know, they made me a captain."
He flicked a tricolored badge on his chest.
"How long are you here? Got time to hear a few of my stories before you start boring me with your own."
"I think I know how all of yours start," Blaze said. "There I was, rum-soaked as the bottom of a barrel, when all of a sudden..."
"It's like you were there," Robert said, reaching across the table and giving him a knock on the shoulder.
"We'll be here for a while," Dante said. "For the moment, there's nothing more." They settled into the warm smoke of the hearth, the earthy smell of simmering stew, the stinging taste of bitter ale. Around them, men came and went, and argued and joked. Dante bent down to his pack and made sure the book was still there. He was a young man in a strange world. Someday he would take his place among the black, but for now the book was his. Just as much, Robert would be there whenever he took the time to find him. For Blaze, he couldn't imagine what could drive them apart. Dante leaned back on the solid wood of his chair, listening to the raucous calls of the crowd, to Robert's beery words and Blaze's guarded laughter. His ears soared with the sounds of all those who still lived. The Great Rift, The Cycle of Aron, Book 2. Chapter 1. They would know his treason in 200 feet. The wagon jolted over a snow-covered hole, shaking the swords in its belly. Down the path through the pines, six soldiers waited, laughter drifting on the icy air. Dante's blood ran as cold as the snows. The soldiers stood across the road astride their horses, red shirts glaring from their chests, straight swords hanging from their hips. Their mounts were lean and travel-worn, and snorted gouts of steam that mingled with the mist. The wagon rattled again. One of the men pointed down the path. Dante swore. It was too late to turn back. Blaze leaned in to the driver.
"Stop the cart!"
"What are you doing?" Dante said.
"Stopping the cart."
"Should I stop the cart?" the driver said.
"Only if you don't want to get punched," Blaze said.
The cart's wheels skidded in the snow-mucked dirt. Dante pitched forward, grabbing his wooden seat before he spilled into the road. Down the way, the riders stared.
"Well, that ought to throw them off our trail."
Dante twisted in his seat to gaze at the muddy wagon. "What do we tell them? That we're taking these arms to Narashtovik?" Blaze rubbed his mouth.
"Those swords are 7 feet long. They weigh 12 pounds.
What are we going to tell them? They're bound for the race of giants. It isn't treasonous to arm."
"Well, then think of something."
"I'm trying. Because treason, as it turns out, isn't one of those look-the-other-way crimes. Except for people who attend the execution of traitors, because you really don't want blood splashing into your eyes, or..."
"I know!"
Blaze said. The red-shirted soldiers kneed their horses, starting down the rutted road. Blaze lowered his voice to a hiss.
"I've got a solution. A whole lot of murder."
Dante shook his head hard. "If a troop of the king's soldiers turns up dead in Norrin lands, do you think that makes the Norrin less likely to be invaded and massacred by the king?" The soldiers' hooves clopped closer.
"Well, think fast!"
Dante's mind spun in circles. 40 feet away, the soldiers slowed their mounts to a walk. Their gazes lingered on Blazer's swords. Dante gritted his teeth.
"I can try to disguise them."
"The swords?" Blaze whispered. "What are you going to do, put wigs on them?" The riders were too close to respond. Dante extended his mind to the nether, the shadowy substance that lurked within all things. Few could even see the nether. Those who commanded its power could change the shape of the world, mending the wounded or killing the firm. As a last resort, Dante would turn it on the king's soldiers pulling to a stop in front of the halted wagon. If they hid the bodies well enough, and the cold pine forest was bleak enough to conceal an entire city of the dead, there was the chance, however fleeting, the soldiers' deaths would be blamed on the snows or the bears instead of the Norrin Dante was trying to free from the king's yoke. For now, though, he had a better idea. The lead rider had a permanent squint. Winter lingered on its deathbed, but his face was tanned and chapped. It was the face of a man who'd spent most of his 40-odd years in the wilds confronting strange men. He jerked his bristly chin at the wagon.
"What are you carrying down the king's road?"
"It's a surprise," Blaze said.
"Surprises are meant to be opened."
The man gestured two of his men around the back of the wagon.
"Rip it apart."
"There's no need for that." Dante hopped down from his seat. Two of the mounted men drew swords with the whisper of steel on leather. Dante held up his hands.
"I'll open it for you. It's just a little wheat. Nothing wrong with a little wheat, is there?"
"That depends on what's under the wheat. More wheat, or something shiny and silver."
"Who would bake bread out of silver?"
Blaze leapt down from the wagon to join the others at the back.
"You'd break a new chamber pot every morning."
The man didn't look his way.
"Some like to hide their coin beneath their grain. To muffle the annoying clink, no doubt. Not to avoid King Modigan's taxes."
"No doubt," Dante muttered.
He focused his mind and sent the nether winging to the wagon, coating its contents in a thin layer of illusion. A soldier pulled aside the oiled canvas, revealing long boxes stacked high. He lifted one of the lids with a squeak of wood. Instead of revealing the long, killing steel of swords, the soldier stared at a box piled high with dusty brown wheat. Dante held his breath. The soldier gazed blankly at the grain. He nodded. Dante willed him to turn away, to drop back the canvas and go on his way. Instead, he plunged his hand into the fake grain. Steel clanked. The man screamed and yanked back his hand. Blood flowed from a gash across three of his fingers. In a panic, Dante let the ethereal illusion fall away. The shocked wheat disappeared, replaced by the reality of the 7-foot swords filling the box. The commander's mouth fell open.
"Weeping wounds, what's happening here? Where did the wheat go? What are you doing with a cartload of Norn swords?"
Dante flung up his hands.
"Well, you see..."
From beside the road, a voice rumbled like falling stones.
"We're taking them away from Norn clans who would put them to no possible good use."
Dante whirled. A lean and shaggy bear stepped from the pines, 7 feet tall and dressed in travel-worn deerskin. He jerked back from the monster, drawing the nether to him in a dark rush. The bear smiled. Dante cursed silently. The man was a Norn, of course, impossibly tall, with thick shoulders and an even thicker beard that rose to just below his eyes. Coin-sized ears poked from his thicket of hair. No matter how many days Dante spent among them, their sheer inhuman size could still catch him off guard.
"I'm sorry I was gone for so long, my lords," the strange Norn said. "Is everything all right?"
"Where have you been?"
Dante improvised.
"I thought I heard the call of the clan of the Whipping Reed," the Norn said. "They hunt these woods. I didn't want them to hunt us as well."
The commander squinted up at the Norn. His hand moved to his sword.
"Who are you?"
"My name is Mourn," the Norn said. "I doubt that is what you mean. What I am is the slave of these fine men. I'm sorry if I startled you."
"Got your papers?"
"I'm sorry, we left our office in our other wagon," Blay said. "He's registered in Yarlin. That's where we're taking these swords."
The commander stared at the blades gleaming in the winter sun. He shook his head hard enough to dislodge his own squint.
"You said you were hauling wheat. I saw wheat."
"I'm a hedge wizard," Dante lied. "You see?"
He snapped his fingers. The wheat materialized atop the swords. Another snap, and it disappeared. One of the soldiers swore.
"The primitives and the clans look at me as a god. Much easier to convince them to turn over their arms when you've got divine right on your side."
"And you think you can trick us as easily as the savages? What are you trying to hide?"
"In the Norn territory, steel is worth more than gold."
Mourn leaned forward, as if disclosing a secret.
"The king's own soldiers have been known to sell swords back to the same clans they confiscated them from. It's a sad thing. Except for the soldiers, I suppose, who now have the money to finally make themselves happy."
"You've heard of that?" one of the red-shirted soldiers nodded. "There's no law out here except for what we enforce."
"That's right," said the commander. "So who authorized this?"
"Lord Wellamore of Yarlin,"
Dante lied smoothly. He patted his pockets.
"I have his writ right here."
Paper crinkled from his doublet. He removed the sheet. It was a purchase order for raw iron from a border town, but before he unfolded it, he overwrote it with a flick of nether. The illusory note was brief, to the point, and concluded with the signature of the non-existent Lord Wallamore. The weathered commander read the note, nodded, and passed it back to Dante. He jerked his head at the soldier's bleeding hand.
"Your deceit hurt one of my men."
"I'm sorry about that. Keeping our country safe carries constant risk."
Dante frowned and drew on the nether again. This time he sent it flocking to the wounded man's hand. The wave of shadows washed away the gash like a trench dug below the tide line.
Better.
The man yanked back his hand, shaking it.
Tickles!
Dante turned back to the commander.
Does this square us?
He squinted between Dante, Morn, and the wagon.
You're doing the king's will. Now get these arms out of here before a clan cuts your throat and carves your bones into spears.
You got it, Blaze said.
He leapt back into a seat behind the driver, who'd watched the exchange without a word. Dante gestured to the Norrin.
Come along, Morn.
As Dante slung himself in beside Blaze, Morn climbed up on the running boards, tilting the carriage under his weight. The driver flicked his reins. The horses leaned forward, yanking the carriage behind them. Dante unclasped his cloak and shucked it off his shoulders. Despite the freezing air, his skin was as hot as a stovetop. He didn't look back at the disappearing soldiers.
What just happened?
Our quick-thinking slave just saved the day, Blaze said. Hey, that reminds me. When did we get a slave?
I'll ask him the moment I stop shitting my pants. Do you have any idea how close that was?
They couldn't prove we're bringing this stuff to the Norrin.
Dante snorted.
Which wouldn't have stopped them from arresting us for treason and torturing us until we revealed Narashtovic spent the last 5 years funding armed Norrin rebellion.
Maybe not.
Blaze patted his swords. But these would have stopped them from living, which would have put a bit of a damper on any arresting and torturing. And left us with a pile of corpses to deal with instead. The wagon bounced between the pines. Dante glanced over his shoulder. Given that Norrin men's beards grew like spring grass, it was tough to gauge their age, but Morn looked no younger than himself. Early 20s, perhaps. Morn caught him staring and nodded back. They spoke little over the next couple miles. Sunlight trickled through the pine needles, pale and bitter. Soon enough, the light dried up like morning rain.
What do you think?
Blaze pointed to the twilight woods. A couple 100 yards off the road, a log shack stood beneath the trees.
Won't do any better than that tonight.
Dante nodded and directed the driver to turn off the road. The shack's roof was half-collapsed, but it was empty of humans and animals. Half-melted snow lay across half the floor. Dante helped towel off the horses, gazing steadily at Morn.
What happened back there?
Morn looked up and shrugged.
You were stopped by Kingsmen. They questioned you about smuggling, then let you go on your way.
Yeah, I remember that. Along with when a total stranger leapt out of the woods and lied to save our asses.
I didn't leap.
All right, you strode from the woods without warning to assist 3 total strangers.
You're not strangers.
Dante threw up his hands.
I've never seen you before in my life.
I've seen you, Morn said. You've been down here for months, bringing us things. Things that could get you in trouble. I know what you're trying to do for my people.
Wrong, Blaze said. We've been down here for years.
Morn stiffened, face going slack with horror.
You're right. I've only seen you here for months. I'm so sorry.
I was just fooling with you,
Blaze frowned.
Don't take it so seriously.
The young Norrin drew back his head in reproach.
Speech is a dangerously imprecise form of communication, even when we try to be as exact as we can be. If we're sloppy on purpose, who knows what disasters might come of it? Nobody. That's who. Nobody mortal. Unless there is a soothsayer somewhere I don't know about.
Well, talking's the best system I've come up with so far, Blaze said.
If you've watched us that long, you must live around here,
Dante said. Morn nodded.
Sometimes. My clan ranges more widely than most. That I know of. You would think it's nice, but you can only see so many hills before they all become the same hillish blur.
Which clan is that?
I belong to the clan of the Nine Pines.
Oh, no, Blay said. Morn cocked his head.
Do you know of us unfavorably?
You must, otherwise a groan must mean something different to you than it does to me.
It's not your clan that's the problem. It's what you've got.
We don't know they have it, Dante said. We don't even know if it's real.
You're right. I'm being sloppy, Blaze said.
It's not about what the Nine Pines may or may not have. It's about Dante's monomaniacal desire to have it for himself.
If the quivering bow is real, we could use it to threaten the king into leaving the Norren alone forever, and destroy the whole capital if he doesn't. What's so monomaniacal about that?
Ah, Morn said. The quivering bow.
Well, Dante said.
Well, what?
What else could it mean? Do you have it or not?
I'm not going to just assume that's what you meant, Morn said peevishly. Anyway, if we have the quivering bow, I'm not aware of it.
Dante's face fell.
Oh. But there is much about my clan that I'm not aware of, because I am young, and they don't tell me things because young people can't be trusted with wisdom. Which makes no sense to me. How can young, foolish people become not young, not foolish people if you never expose them to wisdom?
By hitting them? Blaze said. He smacked his horse's freshly toweled flank.
The smell of animal sweat competed with the frosty pines.
Anyway, in a few minutes it'll be too dark to tell what's kindling and what's a snake. I don't know how much you guys know about building fires, but those aren't ideal working conditions.
He wandered off to gather small branches for the night's fire. Small birds settled into the darkening trees, silhouettes on the skeletal branches.
Dante rummaged through their catch-all pack for the spade, but the ground was half frozen.
No matter how hard he leaned into the undersized shovel, he could only scrape away a handful of dirt at a time.
"You are trying to dig a pit?"
Morn asked after a futile minute.
"I'm trying to dig a hill so we can build a fort on it and be safe and never leave."
Dante scowled up at him. Although it was cold enough to see his own breath, he was sweating under his doublet. He flung down the spade.
"Forget it. It'll be morning before I'm finished with this."
"Perhaps I can help."
Morn knelt and picked up the small shovel. His thick shoulders bunched as he drove it into the ground, dislodging a healthy load of black earth. He glanced up.
"How large would you like your pit?"
"Fire-sized," Dante muttered.
He dug steadily and contentedly, dislodging a half-frozen mix of dirt, leaves, old needles, and dormant grass roots. The smell was earthy and gently rotten. Once, the iron wedge of the spade bent on a rock. Morn gripped the point and the handle in his heavy hands, bore down, and straightened the bend right out.
"You've already saved our lives," Dante said, "or at least from a load of trouble. So I'm loath to ask you another favor."
Morn flung another scoop of dirt.
"But you would like me to ask my chieftain if we possess the quivering bow?"
"Would you?"
"Would I? That is a good question. The asking costs me nothing in a physical sense. On the other hand, if we don't have it because it is imaginary, I could be mocked by my entire clan."
He sat back and pierced Dante with his gaze.
"What would you do with the bow?"
Dante froze.
Could he really just say it out loud, to a total stranger?
On the one hand, Morn was a Norren himself. He would make for a very unlikely traitor or spy.
On the other hand,
What if he was?
The truth would be a risk then, but if there was any chance they had the quivering bow, it was a risk worth taking.
"We'll use it to free the Norren from slavery," he said, "to gain your independence, and that of my homeland of Narashtovik as well."
Morn stared at him beneath the blackening pines.
"I will ask them."
"Ask who what?"
Blaze said, returning with an armload of branches, twigs, and yellow grass.
"What took you so damn long with the firewood?" Dante said. "Well, it's not like this stuff just falls off trees."
Blaze knelt over the fire pit and arranged the kindling. He groaned as Dante and Morn struck out the details of when the two humans would meet the clan of the Nine Pines. Owls hooted through the barrens. Night stole over the woods, as gentle and cold as ancient ghosts.
"You two are a couple of chowder buckets," Blaze said, as they layered the blankets inside the half-ruined shack. "There's no such thing as a bow that can shoot down walls."
"You should be in favor of this," Dante said.
"If the quivering bow is real, and we get a hold of it, it'll save us years of work. No more camping out in God's forsaken woods delivering swords to some clan that might turn them on their clan enemy as soon as we turn our backs. Not when we can say, 'Hey, King Modigan, release the Norren, and us too while you're at it, or we'll bury you under 1,000 tons of your own palace.'"
"Huh," Blaze said into the darkness.
"Any chance we can do this meeting tomorrow, Morn?"
There wasn't. Morn claimed the clan of the Nine Pines was too far away. Instead, the three of them would reconvene in 3 days at the old Norren ruins on Kerrin Hill. In the morning, he said his farewells. Dante and Blaze hopped on the wagon and made their delivery. 3 days later, the two of them climbed Kerrin Hill under cover of night. Mist curled up the hillside. A face loomed downhill, obscured by grey vapour and black branches. In fact, between the distance and the gloom, Dante couldn't be certain there was a face at all. That pale, unflinching shape could be a patch of trunk rubbed of its bark, the wilting white flower of a 5-foot shrub. He glanced at Blaze. The blond man was tracing an obscene drawing on the mist-slicked surface of a fallen stone. When he looked back, the face was gone. "I think someone's following us." Blaze added another curve to his outline.
"No one is following us. What I'm proposing is the radical idea that they are. For one thing, you can't really be followed when you're just standing around. For another, we're 6 miles from nowhere in a graveyard that hasn't been used since we started putting points on the ends of our sticks.
It's not a graveyard."
Blaze smacked the table-sized stone with his palm. Dozens like it littered the hilltop, a handful of others still standing upright, weathered and patchy with lichen.
"Then what you call this?"
"A rejected bed."
Dante peered into the mist. The weather had warmed in the last 3 days, shrinking the snows and feeding the fog. Streamers wafted between the pine needles, carrying the mud and clams scent of the river with them.
"It was a holy place once."
"Whatever it is, I'm cold as hell. Does Callie even know about this little mission of yours?"
"More or less."
"Oh, really?
I'm guessing that less is going to be upset to learn it's being used in place of not at all." Dante put on his haughtiest voice.
"The purview of my authority is as far-ranging as its cruelty, and you would be wise not to disrespect it."
Blaze smeared his forearm across the sketch he'd drawn in the dew.
"Wasn't Morn supposed to be here an hour ago?"
"Yeah."
The shape reappeared among the pines, oval and unmoving. Too pale and small to be Morn. Dante leaned forward on the stone he'd seated himself on. Blaze shoved his shoulder, spilling him into the sodden grass.
If you're that concerned with being watched, let's go ask that guy what he's doing here.
You can't just ask him.
Of course I can.
Blaze stalked downhill.
If I don't like his answer, I can punch him, too.